Today's daf in Chagiga is daf Yud Aleph. God willing, we'll finish the first parak of the Masechta today. Start the beginning, start the second parak. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf Yud Aleph, Ben Zaltzman. And we are finishing up today from a mission that we saw back on daf Yud Aleph. If you take a look back on the Mishnah, on Yud Aleph, so the Mishnah describes three different categories of mitzvahs in the Torah. So, as an example, the first example of the Mishnah was Hetter Nedarim. The fact that that if a person makes a ned and he goes to Talmud Chacham and says, "Look, I made a commitment, I made a vow, but had I known X, Y, and Z, there's no way I would have made it." So, given that there's a Pesach, if in fact there's a legitimate opening, so the Chacham could be Matir Neder. Okay, where's all that found in the Torah? The answer is it's not found in the Torah. So the Gemara describes that as being Porech Bavir, right? Floats in the air. Meaning that there's no Torah Shabbat that describes that. That's all part of Torah Shabbat Peh. Sure, it's part of Torah, but you're not going to find it in Chumash. So that's the example number one in the Mishnah. Then, I should say rather, category number one in the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah gives us a second category. Second category is something which is Harara and Hatulim Basara, mounds which are suspended by hairs. Which means in the analogy, the hair is a pasuk in the Torah, or a couple pasukim in the Torah, but connected to that is an entire mountain. And there's a whole area of halacha that's being that's not actually being described in the Torah, but we know, again, part of Torah Shabbat Peh, but there's a small connection. It's what the Mishnah refers to as Teluyim Basar. It's connected to a hair, suspended by a hair. And examples of that would be the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives a number of examples. Hilchos Shabbos, Chagiga, Me'ila. So Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos. You remember yesterday we did this part of the Gemara. When the Gemara here is describing Shabbos, it's describing concepts like Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, like the concept of Mekalkel. So those are concepts which, again, are not found in the Torah, but they are suspended by hair. Remember yesterday, what was the hair? Right? What was the... Right, the hair for these concepts. So is Malachas Machsheves. That's the that's the example of Shabbos Chagiga. We also spent time yesterday going over what exactly we're talking about when it comes to Chagiga and Meila. That's coming up. That's what we're going to be starting this morning. And then there's a third category in the Mishnah where Mikra Mur v'Halachas Merubos. Where there's a couple of psukim and there's a lot of halachas. And examples of that would be dinim and avodas and taros and tmeos and arayos. I went through that quickly. We're going to go through that in more detail. Where right now with the simple pshat on the Mishnah is that there are not that many psukim, but there's a lot what to talk about on these topics. So yesh lehem amashi yismachu. But at least there's psukim over there. And then the Mishnah ended off by saying hein gufei Torah, which at the time of the Mishnah we didn't understand what that means. And by the end of today's daf, we'll understand what that means. If we take a look now inside, on Yud Amud Beis, we're now up to Me'ila. So Me'ila now is in category number two. Category number two is where it is Hararim Hatluim B'Sa'ara. The mount suspended by a hair. So, and that's by Me'ila. So the Gemara's immediate reaction to that is, what is the Mishnah talking about? Mechtav Ksivan. It's written in the Pasuk, meaning the Isra of Me'ila, Karban Me'ila, so that's all in Pesukim. So why does the Mishnah make it sound like, well, it's you're not going to find in the Pasuk, it's, you know, there's a small reference and allusion to it. No, there is not. There's not a small reference and allusion to it. It's a Pasuk in the end of Parshas Vayikra, where the Torah describes the Karban Me'ila, if a person's mal behektish, a person misappropriates hektish. So why does the Mishnah put in category number two? It doesn't belong in category number two. If anything, I would guess, this is me guessing, put in category number three. It has Pesukim in the Chumash. So the Gemara says, well, La'amirami barcham l'nitzucha ella l'chadinan. So now basically, here's what the Gemara is going to do. It's going to take us a little bit of time, say about the next 15 minutes. The Mishnah is going to, the Gemara is going to try to give us an example of a halacha revolving around the Yisra of Me'ila. And it's a halacha which is not intuitive. We would not have known. And it maybe even flies in the face of the regular concepts and principles of Torah. And maybe that's what the Mishnah is referring to. So we're going to give one, two, three, four different halachas in Me'ila. We're going to cover a lot of halachas Me'ila in the next 15 minutes, where basically these are things that I wouldn't have known about, and therefore it falls under the category of hararim hatluyim basara, mount suspended by a hair. So example number one, says the Gemara, is the following. It's a Mishnah Me'ila. I mean, they're all Mishnahs in Me'ila. So here we go. Mishnah Me'ilah. The Mishnah says, "Ashlich shasta shichusa balabais ma'al lo asta shichusa shlech ma'al." So we have the following principle. This Mishnah over here is discussed extensively in the second parak of Kedushin, which makes sense, of course, because that's the second parak of Kedushin. That's the area in Shas where we talk about shlichus extensively. Shlichus is agency, and in other words, if I set up an agent to represent me, so we have it to this very day. So shlichus shalom kamoso. So once I establish him as my agent, so then he represents me. He's me. So that's true in generally in halacha. The Mishnah and Kedushin in the second part gives us a very simple scenario. I want to be Mekadosh a woman, but right now I'm not available, so, not in the most romantic way I can imagine, but I send somebody else to be Mekadosh for me. So I could do that. Shluchu Shalom Kamoso. I appoint somebody else to go over to the woman and say to the woman, Hariyah Mekadosh is Lee, but not Lee, but whoever send me. And that's working, that's effective. Okay, that's true when it comes to marriage. And it's also true when it comes to Truma as well. As the Gemara in Kedushin over there points out, that's one of the sources of Shlichus is by Truma. That if I'm unavailable to be Mafresh Truma from my house, I'll appoint a Shlich to do so. Okay, what about an Avera? So let's say I go over to a person and say, look, I can't steal. I'd like to steal right now, but I'm just not available. So could you steal for me? Okay, so he could, but in other words, who's going to get stuck with the bill? And this kid, when I say bill over here, I really mean Avera. Mm-hmm. So who gets stuck with the Avera? So we know that ain't shlichus l'dvar Avera, that when it comes to an Avera, so the shlichus doesn't transfer. Okay, and in terms of a deeper analysis, you can go deeper into what exactly that means. But right now, ain't shlichus l'dvar Avera. When it comes to an Avera, so there's no transferring of the Avera to the mishalech, to the one who sent. Okay, and the basic idea, it's a very simple idea, is that when it comes to averas, everyone's responsible for their action. So if you do an avera, you can't say, oh yeah, but he sent me. Okay, good, who cares? Bottom line is, you're the one who did the avera. If you're the one who did the avera, so you're going to be culpable and you're going to be liable. Okay, that's general.
Kids can't say any more than parents. My brother maybe do it.
Right, I've heard that. Once, twice. I understand. Just yesterday. Okay, I've heard it. So good. It doesn't work. It doesn't work now. But in the world of Me'ila, it works. So Me'ila now is an exception to the rule. So even though we normally say Shlich L'Dvar Avera, but when it comes to Me'ila, so if a person says to a Shliach here, look, here's Ma'oz Hekdesh, money that belongs to Hekdesh, I want you to go ahead and to misappropriate, meaning it's my money, obviously, but I want you to do the action. So what happens in the world of Me'ilah, what happens is, as long, the Mishnah makes this point, as long as the Shlich is doing exactly what he's told to do, so in other words, he's still working within the parameters of Shlichus, so then the Mishalech, the one who sent him, is the one who's going to be liable for all the liabilities that come that's connected with Me'ilah. I made this point quickly yesterday, just quickly reiterate, what are the three liabilities of Me'ilah? Number one, you have to make full restitution of that which you misappropriated. Number two, you have to also add on we'll call it a kanas, but it's another 25% on top of that which you stole. Parenthetically, the Gemara, the Torah says it's chamishiso, which would mean a fifth, which would mean 20%. And I'm insisting on saying it's 25%. But if you've gone through enough Gemara, you know that when the Gemara operates with fractions, the Gemara goes with the fraction milabar, not milagav, meaning after the fact, not before the fact. So I'm still within the parentheses. So for example, if it's, let's say, I misappropriate $100, so I say 25%, so it gets me to 125. Once I'm at 125, what's 20% of 125? That's right. That brings me back down to 100. Okay. If you understood that, great. If not, that's also fine. But anyway, that's and now close parentheses. So it's good. So now we have a scenario in the world of Me'ilah where normally Eish Lech L'Dvar Avera, but now by Me'ilah Yesh Lech L'Dvar Avera, good. And that is and that's what the Gemara now wants to file under the category of Hararim Atluim B'Sa'ara, right? Mount suspended by a hair. Who knew? Well, that doesn't normally happen in halacha. And the Gemara now spells this out. V'chi asa shlichus ramai ma'al. V'chi zeh chote v'zeh mischayev. This person is the one who sinned, meaning the shliach. And meanwhile, the me'ilah is transferred over to the Baal Hamos. So hainu kara matulim b'sa'ara. So the Gemara says that's it. That's why now we're going to put it under the category of mount suspended by a hair. Amar Rava Maikusha. So Rava says, look, I don't think any of this is difficult. And furthermore, I wouldn't file this under Hararim Atulim B'Sara. I would still file this under a pasuk in the Chumash. Why? Shani Mila di Alpha Chet Chet Mitzruma, because we have a Gzera Shava. And it is fascinating. And the Gemara made this point yesterday. So it's second day in a row we're hearing this point, which is that if you have a Gzera Shava, that's Ki'ilu, it's as if it's written in the Torah. A Gzera Shava is not just simply a drasha, it's like pasuk written out in the Torah. We learn now from Gzera Shava and Truma. By Truma, okay, so we have this principle of shliach shulchas adam kamoso by truma. We also have it by meila. Okay, so it's gzera shava. And by the way, just to remember, I'm reminding all of us the Gemara Kedushin. Gemara Kedushin says, okay, so now why not create a binyan av? Create a precedent. If we're going to say shulchas adam by meila, which is an avera, so why don't we say it by every avera? So the Gemara Kedushin asked that question, and I'm going on memory. So I apologize if I don't get this perfectly right, but the Gemara over there says there are other examples of shlich l'dvar avera by shlich l'dvar yesh shlich l'dvar avera. So therefore, if there's one example that creates a binyanav, that's a precedent. But if there are multiple examples, so therefore it's no longer a binyanav. Those are the exceptions to the rule. Okay. Ella amar ravelo nitzucha ella l'chedetanya. Okay. So now this is attempt number two. Again, what we're trying to do is find a halacha within the world of meila, where I wouldn't have known about, had it not been for Torah Shabbat Peh. And therefore, it's what the Gemara refers to as Hararim Hatluim Basara. So example number two, Niska Balabais Vol Niska Shliach. Shliach Mal. Following scenario, I have money. Now, the money right now that I have, I'm holding in my hands, is money that belongs to Hektesh. I totally escaped my mind. I totally forgot. Which is normally how Me'ila goes, meaning, you know, it was Shogeg, he forgot. But then here's what I did. I go into over to Shlech and I said, here's the money. Could you go to the store for me and pick up some milk? And okay, right. And the Shlech takes the money, goes to the store. Now, after I handed him over the money, and he left my presence, it then occurred to me, oh no, the money that I gave him was Maus Hektesh. So right now, at this point in time, I've lost my entire Shogeg status. I now know that the money that I gave him is Maus Hektesh. And he now, totally unsuspecting, takes the money and does exactly what I ask him to do. So what's the halacha? Niska balabais vol niska shliach, shliach ma'al. So in that scenario, the shliach was ma'al. The shliach is the one who is going to absorb all the liability and responsibility of being ma'al be'ektesh. Why should that be? So you take a look at Rashi over here. So Rashi writes, I'm going to go through two Rashis inside. One Rashi inside. Niska b'alabais v'chulei b'raisa hi b'perek basar de me'ila. So Rashi says, this is found at the last chapter of Masechta Me'ila. V'hachi garsina l'chidetayin niska b'alabais shehin shal hektesh ashelo yigir shliach chetzo chanvani v'lo niska shliach v'otzian shliach chayev. So the shliach is going to be chayev. Okay, I'm sorry. I really want to read the next Rashi. Anyway, Rashi just sets up the scenario, which I just described. So now the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. We're back to the Gemara. Shliach ani amai ka'avid. I love it. The Gemara speaks like you and I speak. The poor shliach. What did he do wrong? So hainu karara tulim basara. So the Gemara says, look, we can't possibly understand this. Oh, therefore it's a halacha which is a noun suspended by a hair. We wouldn't have known this. So I'm Rav Ashi, my kusha. So Rav Ashi says, it's not so difficult to understand. Dilma mi didavi amotim ha'osektesh l'chulen. So Rav Ashi says, you know, anytime a person misappropriates, it's basically what happened, meaning that's exactly what happened. What happened was is that he forgot it was Maus Hektesh, he forgot it was Maus Hektesh, and he spent the money. Basically, isn't this how normally Me'ila works? So now we get to say it. Now I'd like to do Rashi, and Rashi's now going to explain what's going on over here. Shliach ani my oven. Nehi de balabayis potter, de kevin de niskar. Look, the balabayis is going to be exempt because he remembered. Meaning, at this point in time, if the balabayis was asked the question, remember, the balabayis gave the money over to the shliach. At this point in time, freeze frame the moment. The balabayis has now just remembered, currently remembered, that the money belongs to Hektesh. Okay, he just remembered where he got it from. He remembered now. All the memories are flooding back to him. He remembered that when he put it there, that was Maus Hektesh, that he, of course, he wasn't going to spend, and he was going to bring to the base of Mikdash, and then, lo and behold, like I lose my keys every, second day, third day. So he forgot. And he gave it to the shliach. And then he remembered after having given it to the shliach. So at that point in time now, in terms of a shlichus, what does he want to do? Very simple. He's dissolving the shlichus. Meaning he's basically saying, I gave it to the shliach, it's out of my hands right now. If I can, I would, you know, obviously I would tell the shliach, but I have no way of communication. I want to, not I want to, I am dissolving the shlichus. Rashi writes, Anam sadi desulo nichalei b'shlichus say. We are all going to testify to the fact that he doesn't want the shlichus anymore. The haich of this other person. Okay, good. So now the dissolvement of the shlichus. That part I understand. But now it says, Rashi, here's the part that I don't fully understand. We don't have our head wrapped around, and that is the following. The poor shliach. In other words, yeah, okay, fine. However you want to call it. But let's just... We're just looking at it right now from the perspective of the shliach. The poor shliach. He did exactly what he was told. He wasn't told that that money belongs to Hekdesh money. So in other words, why should he have suffer any liability whatsoever? That was the Gemara's question. And to that, now let's take a look at the next Rashi. And what's the Gemara's answer? Me did the Havid, just like. What does that mean, it's just like? So Rashi writes, Ashar kol motzi amaros Hekdesh lechulin. Bishogig sheyimalo. Av ze bishogig. Hotzian. Dekeven shebito ha-mishlech shlichuso. Havaleihu motzi. So in other words, Rashi explains, you look, there was a dissolvement of the shlichus, that part I understand, and on top of that, now he's holding money that belongs to Hekdesh in his hand, which I understand he didn't know that it belonged to Hekdesh, he wasn't told the bows belonged to Hekdesh, but that's a shogig, and that's always the case. Okay, good. It is a bit of a chiddush, but the Gemara says, but I'm not ready to file this under the category of hararim hatluim basara. It's not like we're not. It's not conjuring up halacha. It basically fits into the halacha that we already know.
Does this behoove the shliach every time he gets money to ascertain that this not?
Yeah, there is a general question, right? Of what kind of responsibility the shlichus has to know what he was given. Right. That's a legal question. It's a Torah question. Okay, it's good. Me did have it. No. This is accepted. I mean, I know. Yesterday we were told, be careful about just learning mishnayos. But no, this is right. It's a good point. But no, this is accepted. So the El Amar Avash El Nestrich El Chetinan. Okay, so here we go now. Attempt number three. Okay, again, what we're looking for is a halacha within Me'ila. That is hararim hatluyim b'sa'ara. It's like it's kind of hanging there. I don't. Where did that come from? So here we go. Not to have an akor shal hekdesh shavizel lamal nasa lechavero humal v'chavero lamal. So let's say you take a beam that belongs to hekdesh. Okay, a wooden beam or a stone that belongs to hekdesh. So you yourself were not mal. You didn't violate. You didn't violate the isra in the Torah of meila. And then you gave it to somebody else, and oh, your friend is going to be mal. So I'm sorry. Let me say it better and let me say it correctly. So you give it to your friend. Now you're the one who took it out of the possession of Hekdesh by giving it to your friend. So you violated the Isra of Me'ilah. What about your friend? Your friend did not violate the Isra of Me'ilah. Why didn't your friend violate the Isra of Me'ilah? So Rashi v'chaver lo mal, last Rashi in the Amud, v'chol shi'asuhu ba'duhu didehi v'ala edehech l'shlum l'hekdesh. Because it belongs to you. You're not the one who transferred the item out of Hekdesh. That was the person who took it. He's the one who transferred that out of Hekdesh. Therefore, he absorbs all the liability of Me'ila. So the Gemara says, that's it. That I just don't understand. What is that? That's a hararim atluim basara. And the Gemara says, I don't think so. Michti mishkal shakla malihu mali chavero. Hainuka hararim atluim basara. That makes no sense. Why should it be that when he takes it, oh, that's not Me'ila. When he gives it to somebody, oh, that is Me'ila. Gemara says that's why it's a mount suspended by here. So the Gemara, to which the Gemara says, in my kushya. Gemara says, I don't think this is so difficult. Dama kedishmol, dama shmol. Hacha begizba ha-mesuros lo avne bingin askinan. Dechol hecha de mancha berishusa didei mancha. So the Gemara says in Shmuel's explanation of this Mishnah in Me'ila, do you know what this Mishnah is describing? Not just anybody. We're talking about the Gizbar. We're talking about basically the treasurer, the CEO, or maybe in this case, the COO. But basically, he's the Gizbar, and he's the one who is going to always be responsible for it. So because of that responsibility, when he takes it, that's not an act of misappropriation. That's not removing it from Hekdesh, because he was entrusted with the responsibility of handling it, accounting for it, meaning it was under his authority. So as he's moving it from one location to another, as he picks it up, that's not a kinyan, that's not an acquisition, that's nothing. Now, when he hands it over to somebody else and he says, hey, you know what, from me to you, enjoy. Okay, that's misappropriation. That's now the point where it might...
Isn't that amazing? Because he knows it's
Hector. Well, let's say at the time when he handed over, it escaped his mind. Okay, so right, he thought it was his. Right, he had a stack of beams that belonged to him, a stack belonged to the Hector. Okay, it escaped his mind, or just escaped his mind. Okay, good. So that's now under those circumstances. Now we understand the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah actually makes perfect sense. And now that the Mishnah makes perfect sense, so now we're back to square one. Where in the world of Me'ila do we have a halacha of hararim atluim b'sa'ara? Right? It's a halacha that's so difficult to understand. It's like a mountain suspended by the hair. Where do we have it now? So the Gemara says, Elam Yisefa, Barim B'sech B'sa'ar, Ezelomah, Ashkidur Tachteh B'Shava Pruta. Let's say you take the beam and you build a house out of it. You build it into your house. Okay, you're building yourself a brand new house, and lo and behold, look, there's a beam. Pick it up, put it into the house. And you build it into the house, so the Mishnah says... You're not violating Me'ilah until you live in the house. And now you actually got benefit, a financial value equivalent to a Shava Pruta, worth of benefit from your beam. Oh, now you're Chayav Me'ilah. Now the Gemara says, now I don't understand. What are you talking about? I mean, the fact that you took the beam and you built it into your house, isn't that enough of an act of acquisition where you've taken something from Hekdesh and you brought it into your own possession? The Gemara says, I don't understand. Mechti, shenuye shanya. You change the nature of the beam. It's what we call shinui. When we get to Baba Kama, we get to the eighth parak, ninth parak? Ninth. I'm going to say ninth. I think I'm even right. So when we get to the ninth parak of Baba Kama, so we're going to discuss the halachas of shinui. Then once I make a change in an item, so that item now belongs to me. So the Gemara says, shinui shanya, you made a change in the item. So you've acquired it the moment you built it into your house. Why are we waiting until you live in the house and get that kind of benefit? And then and only then you're going to be violating Me'ila? So the Gemara says, mali dar, mali lo dar, hainu ka'aram etulim besara. Inexplicable, and that's what we want. We want inexplicable because we want to understand our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that we're looking for a halacha that's totally inexplicable. The Gemara says it's not inexplicable. So the Gemara says, no, the Mishnah could be talking about the following scenario. I'm not building it within the wall of my house. It's not part of the foundation of my house. I have a skylight, and right now what I'm looking for is a little latch over the skylight, right? Something to cover the skylight. So I have a beam, and it happens to be perfect. It's a thin skylight. It's a narrow skylight. I take the beam, I put it over the skylight. I'm doing no physical change in the beam whatsoever. So in other words, I could just as well pick the beam up and hand it right back to Hekdesh. So at this point in time, that's not misappropriation. I didn't make a kinyan on the beam. I didn't change the beam. All I did is just put it on top of my house. I laid it on top. Oh, good. So in terms of kinyanim, so I wasn't moel. Once I get benefit from it, so that's me'ila. Benefiting from an item that belongs to Hekdesh, as long as the benefit that you have is minimum shava pruta, it's worth a pruta, so that's also me'ila as well. And that also would trigger off all the liabilities of me'ila. Restitution, another 25%, and the carbon me'ila.
Doesn't the item
also
for it to be
Me'ila? Correct. There are basically two forms of Me'ila. One is where I take the item and I change it, in effect, a change in the item, like we described, what the Gemara thought we were talking about, and the other is just getting benefit from an item. Getting benefit from an item also is going to represent Me'ila. Right? The Mishnah over there, if I remember correctly, I hope I do, it talks about where you drink from cups that belong to Hekdesh. Right? So you're not affecting any change whatsoever, but you're benefiting. Okay, so e darbe in, e lo darbe lo. Okay, fine. El al olam kidarava. So what just happened in the Gemara? So what we were looking for was the halach in the world of Me'ila, where it's inexplicable, and then the Mishnah, our Mishnah in Chagiga, makes perfect sense. It's hararim hateluyim b'sa'ara. We went through four different halachas in Me'ila. The balabais remembering that the money belonged to Hekdesh. Three, taking a beam and handing it to your friend and only violating Me'ila at the point of handoff. Four, building a beam into your house and for what we thought was an inexplicable reason, you're not violating Me'ilah until you live in the house. But then what we did for each of these four halachas in Me'ilah is we explained it. It makes sense. It fits into what we know in the world of halacha. So now we're kind of stuck because our Mishnah says, you know, Me'ilah falls under the category of Hararim Hatluyim Besar. It's the amount suspended by the hair. What are we talking about? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what we are talking about. So, sorry. Zumalachadrav, we just did that. Sorry. Ela la'olam kidarava. So the Gemara says, so you know what we're going to do? We're going to go back to number two. Okay, so halacha number two. So halacha number two, the Gemara now says, I know we explained it, but it's really inexplicable. Why? So dekaka shalach mi dedave amot emas hakdesh lechulen hasam me deyada dekazuze dehakdesh yibay leluyune hachamiyada. The Gemara says, and I think I heard some of us in the room also make this point. Look, when I'm the balabais and I have money in my house that belongs to Hakdesh, so fine, it escaped my attention. But you're liable, and the reason why you're liable is because you know that at one point in time you put Hakdesh somewhere in your house. And now the fact that you forget, look, we all forget, it's human, but you should have been more careful. You knew that there was Hakdesh money circulating in your house. And so therefore, at the time when you took the money, you didn't mean to do anything wrong, but that's the whole idea behind Shogeg. The whole idea behind Shogeg is you should have been more careful. Right, Shabbos, you were Mechalel Shabbos b'Shogeg. What does that mean? Doesn't mean that, you know, I by accident hit a light switch. That's not Shogeg, it's misasik, it's nothing. What it means is that I'm turning the light switch on because I thought today was Sunday. That's Shogeg. Okay, I thought today was Sunday, right? That's a good excuse. It's not going to be a capital punishment. That's for sure not the case. But you should have been more careful. You have to bring a carbon chatas. That's the idea behind Shogeg. So here, when I'm thinking about the Mishalech versus the Shliach, the Mishalech, he should have been more careful. He knew there was Hekdesh money in the house. Now let's turn to the Shliach. Money was handed over to the Shliach by the Mishalech. How in the world does, and this, Ben, this goes to your point, how in the world is the Shliach supposed to know that the money that was given to him may in fact possibly be Hekdesh? He wasn't told otherwise. For him, there shouldn't be any Shogeg whatsoever. He was just given money. And to which, and Rashi over here says, you know what this is more like from the Shliach's perspective? It's more like Ones. It's not Shogeg. Again, you're going from the Mishalech standpoint. That's true. But from the Shliach standpoint, the liability of Me'il is incurred only because there's some element of Shogeg. To which the Gemara is saying, from the Shliach standpoint, there's no element of Shogeg. He was given money and he there's no context whatsoever that would have indicated that he should have thought otherwise, that maybe this money belongs to Hekdesh. The Gemara says, okay, now that we're here, so the Gemara says, good. Now that we thought we understood it, now that we don't understand it, good. We want not to understand it. Why do we not want to understand it? Because we want now to understand our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Hararim Atulim Basara. The Gemara says, good. Hachamiyad, Hainuk Hararim Atulim Basara. Okay, that halacha is harder to understand. And because it's harder to understand, so now you understand how in the world of Me'ilah, there is a halacha out there that's harder to understand. Okay.
I'm
sorry, just wanted to...
Yeah, one. Kiddushin, if somebody sends a shliach, and then he changes his mind, and the shliach gives it to the woman, and says,
they write that.
So what's that? So is he married
The Mishnah in the Gittin, I assume it's a dissolvent of the Shlichus, I assume. The Mishnah in Gittin has similar scenarios, right? The fourth parak of Gittin, right, where the man sends a get to his wife with a Shliach, and then en route, so he says, you know what, right, let me rethink the whole thing. He dissolves the Shlichus. So good. So he could do it. He could dissolve the Shlichus. How is it done technically? I don't remember all the details. I'm just, you know. But there is an idea where you can be dissolved the Shlichus. Yes?
Regarding his question, it was only the reason is using it here as an exception because of that could not happen in the Kedushin. If the person dissolves it, then it's not acceptable.
Right, so correct. But that's exactly the point over here. Here, the man was given money that belonged to Hakdesh. It is an exception. 100% an exception. So, but what the Gemara is now pointing out is that, based on what we generally know, meaning we have concepts in halacha. We have a concept of shogeg. We have a concept of ones. We have concepts in halacha. So if I went with my general conception of what halacha is, the conclusion would have been that the shliach wouldn't have been liable. He's an ones. He's not a shogeg. Correct. So in... right. Correct. Right. Whether or not this has application to other areas of halacha, that's a good question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but that's exactly the Gemara's point over here. This doesn't fit into what we generally conceive of halacha. So right now, all the best I can tell you is halacha. Right, hararim hatulim basar. It's a mountain suspended by hair. Okay. Right, we don't know. Meaning that's exactly the worst point. We don't know, but there's a liability. Okay, let's go on. I'll discuss later. I'll discuss. Come to me later. A lot of follow up questions over here, and I gotta go. Mikra muad v'halachos merubos. Couple psukim, lot of halachos. So Tana. So in the Mishnah, good. Mishnah, now we're into category number 3, where there are psukim, not that many psukim, some psukim, and a lot of explanation, meaning a lot of Torah Shabbat Peh. So now, that's fine, but then we get to the Braisa. Tana, we learned on the Braisa, Negaim, V'alos, Mikra, Mu'av, Alachos, Merubos. When it comes to Negaim, meaning Saras, in all forms of Saras, and Ohalos, Tumas Ohel, so there are some psukim, but a lot of halachos. To which the Gemara says, Negai Mikra Mu'a, Negai Mikra Mu'rubahu. So the Gemara says, have you gone to shul for Parshas Tazria and for Parshas Mitzora? I'm embellishing the Gemara's question. So the, right, and you're sitting there, Tazria and Mitzora, especially when they're together. And so that's a lot of psukim that they're this form of Negaim and they're this form of Nega and they're this form of Nega. And it gets to the point where, like, you're sitting there and you're listening and, wow, there's a lot of psukim dedicated to a topic which in our lifetime we've never seen. Hopefully one day we will see it. I don't know if that's a really clear sentence, but you understand. I mean, we'll get to the point where, like, you know, there will be zochet to the point where it could happen again. But what is the Braisa talking about? There's not a lot of psukim. There are a lot of psukim when it comes to tzaras. So Amarav, Papa Hachikamar, Negai Mikra Murubav Alachas Muat, Tzaralos Mikra Muav Alachas Murubas. Okay, so let's change our understanding of the Braisa. It's the only way to understand the Braisa. The Braisa was not describing Negaim. Negaim is lot of psukim. Okay, and some Mishnayos. Oalos, not a lot of psukim. Lot of Mishnayos. Well, my nafkamina, I'm mistaf chalamilsa, but Negaim, I'm becry, mean mistaf chalamilsa, but oalos, I'm bemasnithin. And then the Gemara makes a statement which, at face value, I don't fully understand, but it says, look, when it comes to Negaim, if you have a suffix by Nega, go to Chumash. Because there's a lot of material, a lot of textual material in Chumash regarding Nega. If you have a suffix regarding Ohalos, so then go straight to the Mishnah. So not that much psukim, they're going to be able to help you. Okay, Parshas Chukas. There are some psukim that talk about Tumas Ohel, but not really a whole lot. Okay, Dinim. Now we get on to civic law. Mechtev Tzivan. Right. Another example. Okay, good. Right, you're right. Look, we're... The Mishnah over here is not giving us an exhaustive list of here's everything. The Gemara is just giving examples, and you're right. In other words, once we know the example, so then we could, you know, if we would like to, I don't know if, you know, this is going to be the best use of our time, then we can go through the entire Torah and then kind of fit it into the right category. So the Gemara says Mechtav Ksivan. So the Gemara says, what about Dinim? So Dinim, basically civic law. So the Gemara says it's all pretty straightforward. You go through Parshas Mishpatim. Okay, you got it's all spelled out for you. So the Gemara says, "On itzruchelach Rabbi D'Tanya Rabbi Omer nefesh shachet nefesh mamon." So Rabbi says, "No, even in civic law, there are areas in the Torah where I need Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Chsav is not going to tell me what the halach is, and I need Torah Shabbat Peh." Following scenario, let's say this is using myself as an example would not be the best idea right now, but let's say I'm in a fight with somebody else, and let's say as I'm in a fight with somebody else, so like I'm really had it with that person, and I'm trying to terminate his life. So right now, I want to kill that person. And instead of killing that person by accident, right, my fist goes in the wrong direction, and the person's standing right next to him, and I kill the person who's standing right next to him. Okay. So, any lawyers out there, so I know you all have terms for that, right? Manslaughter, unintentional homicide, okay, whatever. However works in law. I'm not I don't know. But anyway, but in halacha, okay, area I'm a little more comfortable with. So in halacha, this is classically known as right? So my intention was to kill this person, and I used the kind of force that would have killed this person, but by accident, I killed, by mistake, accident is a poor choice of word over here, but by mistake, I killed that person instead of this person. Okay, what's the halacha? So the halacha is, this is a major machlokus amongst the Tanayim, whether or not you are subject, in this case, I would be subject to capital punishment, or no, I'm not subject to capital punishment. Rebbe's of the opinion that you are not subject to capital punishment, even though I terminated a human life, but nevertheless, I'm not subject to capital punishment. I am. What is the punishment? Now, the Torah says, nefesh tachas nefesh, right? A soul for a soul. The Gemara says, mamon. That means that the person whose life I terminated, we evaluate how much that person is. I know putting a price tag on a person is not something which we normally do, but can be done. And if we and I pay the heirs the money of that person's life. This is right from a macro standpoint. Yeah, correct. It's I'd say you're right. Okay, I'll tell you what, Danny. Okay, I'll tell you what. Correct. Table the discussion. Afterwards, you want to sit down and discuss whether he needs to go to Aram Mikla or not. Okay, that's fine. Ata Omer Mamon Oino La Nefesh Mamish Nemar Nisina La Mazav Nemar Nisina La Malam Alahala Mamon Afka Mamon. And the Gemara says, look, according to Rebbe, it's Gzeirah Shavah. It says, Nesina below, right, Venasata Biflilim. That's describing a scenario where a person terminated a fetus, okay, and that engenders another major discussion of, well, how do we view a fetus? Is it a life? It's not a life? Again, we're going to bypass the whole discussion for now. The basic point is that if you terminate a fetus, so you're going to owe the money of the fetus to the mother. So too, over here, nefesh, tachas nefesh, means that you're going to have to pay the monetary value in such a scenario. Okay, that's a halacha which is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, and that's why you need Torah Shabbat pay even for that as well. Avoda, mechsev ksivan. Now we go on to the topic of avoda. Avoda, explicitly mentioned in the Torah. What are you talking about? That it's that there's some Torah Shabbat. What Torah Shabbat pet do you have regarding avoda? Gemara says, no, we have Torah Shabbat pet by avoda. Lo nitzrucha ela lahalachas adam. When it comes to the point where, remember, by avoda there are four avodas. There are four parts. There are four avodas. Shechita, shechting the animal. Halachas adam, taking the blood over to the mizbeach. I just realized. Okay, let's do that again. Shechita, shechting of the animal. Kabbalah Saddam, receiving the blood in a bowl. Holacha Saddam, walking the bowl of blood over to the Mizbeach. And Zbrika Saddam, and sprinkling. Those are four avodas. Now, of those four, which one is not mentioned in the Torah? Holacha. And yet, it's an avoda, subject to all the rules and regulations of an avoda. So if you do the holacha, while you're in, if the coin's in an aurel, I'm going over Rashi's example, or if he's sitting, or if he, I know, sitting in halacha, I don't know how the two go together, but, okay, fine, good. But if he's in an aurel, or if he's sitting, or if the coin's a balmum, or if there's pigle involved, where the coin has a bad machshava while doing the avodah, bad machshava in this context means chosuz mano, chosuz mkomo, again, halacha is subject to all the psulim of the other three avodas, despite the fact that it's not written in the Torah. Detanya v'ikrivo zeh kubal sadam. The hikrivo means that's a reference to kubal sadam. V'afkir rechman ha-balashan halacha dechsi v'ikriva kohen es ha-kol v'ikir mizbecha. V'amar marzu halacha sevarim. And we have another subtle reference to halacha, but that's talking about the walking of the limbs l'kevis to the ramp. L'memar da-halacha lo tifke mechlal kabbalah. And meanwhile, so the halacha itself is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, but still it is the same status as Kabbalah Saddam. So just like Kabbalah Saddam is subject to all the psulim, so too is halacha subject to all the psulim, despite the fact that it's not written. And that's why the Mishnah says, look, there are psukim, but it's not exhaustive. The Torah doesn't give us all the halachas of avoda. Taharos, so the Gemara says, even by taharos, we don't have all the laws of Taharos mentioned in the Torah. For example, how big does a mikveh have to be? We don't know. We know. But I'm saying the Torah doesn't say. The lok siva, the tanya, v'rachas b'mayim, b'mei mikveh. et kol b'saro, mayim shekol gufo ola behem. The Gemara here quotes a number of drashos, two drashos. One is that it has to be a collective rain, pool of rainwater. Number two, the second halacha is your whole body has to go into the mikvah in one time. V'kamein ama ama b'rum shalosh amos. And that is one ama by three amas. Right? One times three, three cubic amas. So, v'shiru chachamim me mikvah arbaim saw. And that was a linear, that was a cubic linear measurement. Now let's convert that into a volume. So the chachamim did so, and they went from one by three to a volume of 40 saw. That's the that minimum requirements of a mikvah. So that is not mentioned in the Torah. It's part of Torah Shabbat Peh. Okay, good. The Gemara says, even in the world of Tumah, there are certain halachas which are not mentioned in the Torah. For example, eight shratzim, eight creepy, crawly little items that go on the ground. I know, I gave you the scientific definition. I'm aware. And on those items, once they, those bugs are dead, toads, frogs, lizards, whatever they are, when they're dead, and you touch the corpse of any one of those items, so now you have just become tummy. That was a transmission of tumma, only for these eight, not for any others. So, what if I don't have the entire lizard in front of me? What if I only have the tail of a lizard or the leg of a lizard? As long as its volume is at the size of an adasha of a lentil bean, so then it's I'm going to become tummy. Where did that come from? That's not Torah Shebichsav. That's Torah Shebapeh. The Lo Ksiva, it's not in the Psukim. The Tanya Bahem Yachol Bekulan Tamalomer Mayhem Yachol Bemiksasun Tamalomer Bahem Hakesad Ashi Agiv Bemiksasun Shu Kekulo. I have to touch a part of the Sheretz which is a significant size. What's a significant size? Shiru Chachamim Bechadasha, the size of a lentil. Shekein Chomei Tchilasa Bechadasha. Now it's interesting. It's Halach Lamoshe Mesinai. But at the same time, the Gemara gives us a little tama davar, a little explanation. Do you know why? Because at the birth, at the point of origination of a lizard or any whatever this animal is, the chomet. Okay, again, just don't turn from me for definition. But when its point of origination, it's the size of an adasha, the size of a lentil. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Kizan of Halta. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, gives another explanation. You know what it's like? It's like when you cut the tail off of a lizard, so it still has its neural activity, it still twitches, and so therefore it's a significant amount. The Gemara is not saying it's alive, that tail's alive, but just simply, you see that significant because it still has some twitching. Arayos. We're up to now the last example given the Mishnah where Michtav Ksivi, but not all of it. Not all of it. We need Torah Shabbat Peh even for the Arayos. So the Gemara says, Michtav Ksivi, what do you mean? You really? We need Torah Shabbat Peh? Okay, the list in the Torah seems to be pretty exhaustive, meaning we have Arayos mentioned once in Parshas Acharemos, repeated again in Parshas Kedoshim. It seems like it's a pretty exhaustive list. What's not mentioned in the Torah? So the Gemara says, "Labito mianusaso." Let's say a man has relations with his daughter, but it's not out of a marriage; it is out of anusa. Right? The child came as a result of an act of rape. That's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. The Loksive, it's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. Now, here's what I'm going to skip. Okay, good. I have this on record. I'm going to skip now. Rashi goes through the entire derivation of how we know this is not mentioned in the Torah, and even though it could be derived through a kavachomer, but we don't generate halacha. We don't generate isurim. Let me be clearer. We don't generate isurim and we don't generate punishment using kavachomer, using a logical deduction. So we could have logically deduced that even the daughter that is not a result of a marriage, a child out of marriage, is still going to be one of the arayos, and it could have been deduced through kavachomer, but we don't do that. And how do we generate this halacha? Torah Shabbat Peh. The halacha is generated through Torah Shabbat Peh, through a double gzera shavah. D'tanya Rava Omer, D'amar Rava Amar Li Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi Asya Hina Hina Asya Zima Zima. It's a double gzera shavah. Okay, please forgive me. I'm not going to go through the gzera shavah right now. I know that in Yevamos, which this is going to, you know, get us ready for Masechta Yevamos, so we're going to go through the drasha in more detail. So please hold off. Come back for Yevamos, where we'll go through the drasha inside. Finally, and Hein Hein Gufei Torah, the last line of the Mishnah says, this is Gufei Torah, this is the main body of Torah. Sounds like the simple reading of the Mishnah going all the way back to Daf Yud Amud Aleph is, what do we mean this is a simple pshat in the Mishnah? I'm sorry, this is the main part of Torah, only category number three. What does that mean? Category 1 and 2, also Minat Torah. It can't be more Minat Torah than something else. So the Gemara says, Hani in Hanach Lo. The Gemara can't believe that. Ela'ema hein vehein gufei Torah. So an important insertion of Avav, hein vehein, right? Everything mentioned in the Mishnah. Category 1, 2, and 3 are all part of gufei Torah. And that is the end of the first parak of the the first parak of the Masechta. Okay, tomorrow. Tomorrow we're gonna embark on the second parak of the Masechta. In terms of interest, it's hard to find a more interesting parak in Shas. They're all good, they're all interesting. But you'll see what I mean over the course of the next 3 or 4 days of Daf Yomi. We're gonna be treated to just unbelievably basic Agadata. Some of it's very popular, some of it you know already, but we're going to see it inside. Hopefully, pay some attention to it. And then, somewhere in the middle of the second parak, the Masechta is going to make a transition. We're going to go from the world to Agadata to Tuma and Tahara. Also, if I can engender some sort of excitement for that as well. It's very exciting. Tuma and Tahara. Okay, I'm going to obviously, prepare for that as well, and hopefully we'll treat that as well with the attention that it deserves. Okay, Adkan.